This is Politics Weekly. I'm Heather Stewart. It's a year until Britain leaves the EU, but new revelations show how Vote Leave may have broken election spending rules during the referendum campaign. We'll hear from the Observer journalist who broke the story.
This is the scandal that goes to the heart of government.
Also this week, 2 years after a major party inquiry, Labour's problems with anti-Semitism have flared up again. Jeremy Corbyn says he regrets defending a racist mural and admits there are pockets of anti-Semitism in his party. As demonstrators marched in Parliament Square, we'll hear from Labour MP Wes Streeting, who joined them.
I never imagined that there would ever be, let alone could ever be, a demonstration against the Labour Party on the issue of anti-Semitism and our failure to tackle it.
But first, this Thursday will mark exactly a year until Britain leaves the European Union. With the clock ticking, David Davis and his crack team of negotiators have little more than 6 months to agree the outlines of Britain's future relationship with the EU27 on trade, security, immigration and fisheries. Theresa May will then present that deal to Parliament and ask MPs and peers to vote on what's on offer. But this week, questions over the legitimacy of the referendum itself were raised again, with allegations of improper spending by the winning Vote Leave campaign, who, having reached its own spending limits, donated nearly £700,000 to assist a group of young campaigners called Believe. On Sunday, one of those young campaigners, Shamir Sani, went public. He described the moment he realised he'd be getting the donation, but would not be able to control how it would be spent.
To sort of find out that my organisation, but the work that I have done, has received funding of almost £1 million. I was elated. It was amazing. Can I get my train tickets paid for? So can I get, I was thinking like £200, £300 maybe to sort of cover the costs of my volunteering. But the money never touched the bank account. The money has to go to AIQ. Who's AIQ? What is AIQ?
At this point, Chris Wiley, the Cambridge Analytica whistleblower, takes up the tale.
Aggregate IQ very much was part of this Cambridge Analytica universe or network of companies. I also helped set up AIQ as a company, which then later became, one of the largest expenditures of Vote Leave. They would be looking for the types of people online that they should be sending different types of messages to, whether that is, a young urban progressive who should receive, a softer Brexit message, or whether that is, a hardcore UKIPper who should be receiving a tougher message. They would be the ones that would help the campaign figure out what message should go to what type of person and on what platform and channel on, the internet, should that be disseminated through.
Now, Vote Leave have strongly argued that they operated within the rules, but there are numerous unanswered questions and the Electoral Commission is still investigating. So I'm joined now by the Observer reporter who broke the story, Carol Cadwallader. Carol, lay us out for us. What have you discovered about this donation and the relationship between Vote Leave and its sister campaign, Believe?
Well, we've known for more than a year now that this donation just looked really, really dodgy. And it's not just me. There's other journalists and campaigners who've been sort of jumping up and down about this. And the Electoral Commission looked into it and then they said there's nothing to see. And then the Electoral Commission looked into it again and they came back and said there's nothing to see. And then in November, they actually agreed to open an investigation into it after there was a threat of a judicial review. So we've known this is the background, the context. And so we've always known, like, why did Vote Leave give £675,000 to a student? And so the amazing thing about Shamir coming forward is that he is able to say directly from his own experience of what happened there. And essentially, he says that they were just a front operation. This was just all Vote Leave spending. And that is, if that's proven, that is completely illegal under Britain's electoral law.
And that's the important point, is it? You're allowed to donate to a third party, aren't you, as a sort of campaign group, to another campaign group, but you're not allowed to then direct how that money is spent.
That campaign has to be completely separate. And it has to be an independent body and it has to spend it, in its own way. Now, there is absolutely, we've just got reams and reams of evidence. Believe, Shamir, Darren, they were just inside Vote Leave's offices and they were being directed at all times by Vote Leave senior directors, including these people who are now advisors to Theresa May. So this really is, it sounds like a cliche, but this is the scandal that goes to the heart of government. It really does.
And you're talking about Stephen Parkinson, aren't you? He's the political secretary.
Not just Stephen Parkinson. I hate what Stephen Parkinson did this week. I hate what Number 10 did. They actually officially confirmed from the government email account, they outed a young man, and it's absolutely disgraceful.
So we should say that they claim that this information appeared first on a blog post by Dominic Cummings, who was closely involved in the Vote Leave campaign.
It's got nothing to do with the government. It's got nothing to do with the government. It's an absolute disgrace. I'm amazed that more people aren't absolutely outraged about this. It's so egregious and awful, and it had such impact. You know, there's, I've sort of 48 hours of talking to Shamir over this period, and he having to come out to his pair, you know, to his mother and his sisters. It was awful. But the thing is, it's not just Stephen Parkinson. So you can, it's Cleo Watson. Cleo Watson is another advisor to Theresa May. Her name is all over the email. She was head of outreach at Vote Leave, and these were young people who were picked to do this because they were young. They weren't connected, they were poor, they were working class, they were immigrants. These were the people who were selected.
And Carol, the Electoral Commission's taking another look at this, isn't it? What happens next?
The Electoral Commission is that investigation is already live, but the problem is the Electoral Commission has got zero powers. And even if it does come back and say, yeah, actually, this is the biggest overspend in British electoral history, you know what the maximum thing they can do is slap £20,000 fine on an election which is changing the constitution of the country. So it's absolutely, we need this to be properly considered by politicians and to have a proper political means of addressing this, you know, what has been potentially a massive, you know, breaking of the laws.
And we should say that MPs are looking at this, aren't they? That the Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee has been interviewing Chris Wylie this morning. He's given hours of testimony, which I have to say has kept everyone in Parliament completely compelled for hours on end. But you know, what's he revealed?
There's all sorts. I mean, there's one of the key things which, you know, on Sunday on the BBC, I was told, oh, there's no evidence that links Cambridge Analytica, the company at the heart of this scandal last week, to AIQ, Aggregate IQ, the company in Canada, which the official Vote Leave campaign worked with. Now, four different campaigns funneled their money through AIQ. And today, Christopher was talking about how, not just how he helped set that company up to work with Cambridge Analytica, but he was also talking about this stuff which was, you know, we uncovered jointly, which is how AIQ was disseminating this awful content in Nigeria, voter suppression material, violent material, how it handled this hacked email. Cambridge Analytica worked with hackers. They hacked the president of Nigeria's emails, and those were distributed as, you know, to deter voters. And Aggregate IQ were an essential part of that campaign.
It's really murky stuff.
It's a story that's got
a lot further to run, I think. Carol Gunn-Waller, thank you very much. Now, I'm joined in the studio by my panel, Guardian columnists Owen Jones and Hadley Freeman, and our chief leader writer, Randeep Ramesh. So, Randeep, these allegations about the Vote Leave campaign have been swirling around for a while now. Why has it taken Carol and The Observer to gather this evidence and not the authorities?
That's a good question. Perhaps Carol is more tenacious than the authorities.
She's certainly tenacious.
The theatre of journalism lends itself to this story because it's such a series of almost unbelievable claims that anyone would be able to do this stuff and get away with it. But quite plainly, that seems to be the case, with all the usual caveats that we don't know the real facts and allegedly this might have happened. But it seems to have been facilitated by the giant surveillance machine that is Facebook, that for a number of years sucked up information and sold out information on.
To be fair, politicians of all stripes have made use of that, haven't they?
Including Barack Obama, famously. I suppose that then you get into slightly murky territory of kind of what the information is used for. Sometimes it's voter suppression rather than voter engagement. And then there's the other question, which Carol did this weekend, which is really about whether the Leave campaign broke election laws. And she makes a compelling case, and obviously the MPs are hearing some of that today. The questions we have to ask is, do we have the laws, the regulatory framework, and the regulators with enough teeth, the watchdogs, as it were, to deal with this stuff? And I think that's an open question.
And the resources to investigate it too. Owen, if it is found by the Electoral Commission that Vote Leave has broken the rules, What do? We have to rerun the referendum?
No, I think I'm going to have to disappoint people there. There's very, very unlikely.
You're not going to disappoint me. I'd have to cover it.
We're not going through that again. As fun as that referendum campaign was for all involved. No, I mean, look, firstly, Carol's investigative journalism is superb. It really is. And it's classic investigative journalism at its best. But I do worry, as somebody who campaigned for Remain, who detested a Leave campaign based on bigotry and lies and whipping up hatred against immigrants and making, you know, claiming Turkey was going to join the European Union, Turkish criminals are going to come here, lies, that there are some who cannot accept that we lost the referendum. And it's almost like there was some bizarre administrative error. You get this slightly in the United States with the presidential elections as well, that instead of a lot of soul-searching on our own part about the terrible failures of the Remain campaign. You could argue, of course, the Remain campaign had the government in support of it, including spending £12 million sending a leaflet to every single postal address in Britain explaining why the government wanted people to stay in the European Union. Was that really kind of, you know, in a referendum campaign? And is that kind
of
acceptable?
In a lot of ways, at the time, Vote Leave was seen as the plucky underdog, weren't they? That's how it felt.
Yeah, I mean, then again, you know, they did have a lot of the right-wing press, The Sun, the biggest newspaper in the country, the second biggest, you know, the Daily Mail. This was not some anti-establishment uprising, even though many people may have voted for Leave on that basis. But I do worry that sometimes that perhaps centrists are falling into the bad habits that we on the left often have exhibited, which is, for example, when we don't do well in an election, the polling is bad, we just say it's the mainstream media brainwashing people, and they're just too ignorant, and we don't have to analyse our own failures in that context. And I do worry that, you know, in America, I'm sure there was Russian meddling, but that isn't why someone like Trump, who it seemed less likely, I mean, there was misogyny as well, but it did seem less likely an asteroid hitting Earth than Trump winning. And there did seem a sense of, can we find any other reason than our own failures? And I do think, as a Remainer, there has been a lack, particularly the official Remain campaign, which was dire, to analyse those failings and understand why people are so angry and upset. And if we end up looking like, you know, we're saying, well, actually, people were just duped and they're a bit stupid or manipulated in some way, then that isn't going to address the reasons why so many people did vote Leave. And according to the polling, there's been no shift in any significant way for either people who voted Remain or Leave.
Do you think that's right, Hadley? Do you think we need to sort of move on? Is it a stage of grief, this, really? Do we need to do a bit of self-examination and then sort of move on?
I'm sure, no question. Oh, no, it's of course right that this is the way people cope with the shock of having lost. And it's also true about the American election. I say that as someone who campaigned very hard for Hillary and is a very proud member of Democrats abroad here. But I also do think it's fair. People look into that. I mean, these, you know, whether it's Trump or whether it's Brexit, these are the people who are going to be taking over very important, powerful countries. We should be looking into whether they gain those countries illegally. I think that's fair enough. That's not necessarily, you know, sort of bad losing, although it may be motivated a little bit like that. That is also fair enough.
I mean, I agree with that. I think the lesson should be not that we're going to somehow claim the result was illegitimate, as much as many of us would perhaps like a way for us to do that, to run the referendum campaign over again. It's to learn the lessons and to change the law and the regulatory framework to make sure that this doesn't happen again. But it does also mean analysing the Remain campaign and, you know, was that, did, you know, George Osborne going on national radio to say there'd be a punishment budget if Britain, you know, voted to leave. That wasn't true. And a lot of those predictions of economic mayhem, as well as the fact the government used its position to support the Remain side. So, I mean, I just think on all sides, we have to learn lessons, particularly in how we do politics in this country.
Yeah, and presumably it's partly about thinking about what motivated that vote, right, Mandeep, and what domestic policies we need, not just what Brexit deal we need, but what domestic policies we need to address some of those issues that might have motivated people to want to leave.
Yeah, I mean, some sense it's hard, isn't it? Because elections, there's a sort of they're an instant kind of poll.
Yeah, it's a weird snapshot. That's true. Yeah,
it's a snapshot, and what we draw from that, the inferences we draw are the, you know, the left behinds. We say that this post-industrial Britain hasn't really appeared in many of these kind of older places, that people are kind of not experiencing growth evenly throughout the country. So all those things can be true at that particular time, and you know, the problems with democracy is we don't really rerun it. I mean, once the votes happen, we kind of accept it. Even in the American context, impeachment is quite a process, and it's a political decision at the end, and it's a decision about the high crimes and misdemeanors committed by the executive, the president in that respect. So you kind of, the safety valves of democracy are such that we accept it's imperfect, it's run under those conditions, you kind of accept the result, and you say, well, there are reasons why people voted for what seemed to be very extreme positions. But remember, that is in all a series of inferences that we do because we're conditioned to accept democratic kind of institutions and values and the way things operate. And I think that's the kind of lesson from it. And yeah, we do have to reform through experience with Vote Leave and Brexit, because unlike other elections, it's a kind of on and off thing. I mean, you're leaving the European Union on the basis of vote. So I think there is a stronger argument there, but it would be a lot to sort of put in train a series of mechanisms that allows you to find enough evidence to alter a referendum result. That just seems like a
big step. It was a kind of one-off thing. So in a way, electoral law is not really suited to it, or doesn't really address it normally to deal with it.
But yeah, you know.
Well, you can continue to follow all the developments in this story on theguardian.com/politics. Now, back in 2016, a series of allegations of anti-Semitism involving Labour figures, including former London Mayor Ken Livingstone, led to an internal party inquiry into the matter. Shami Chakrabarty, who shortly afterwards became a Labour peer, concluded that the party was not overrun by anti-Semitism, but that specific procedures should be put in place to eradicate it. Now, 2 years later, the issue has flared up again, in part due to an allegation that Jeremy Corbyn himself defended an artist responsible for an anti-Semitic mural in a Facebook post in 2012. Well, joining me on the line now is the Labour MP, Wes Streeting. Wes, you were down at the demonstration yesterday against anti-Semitism. How's it come to this point?
Well, it's a good question. I never imagined having been on protests actually against Labour governments. I protested against Iraq. I actually organised demonstrations against tuition fees during my days at NUS. I never imagined that there would ever be, let alone could ever be, a demonstration against the Labour Party on the issue of anti-Semitism and our failure to tackle it. And I think the fact that the demonstration was necessary, and that the representative bodies of British Jews have written to the Labour Party in the terms that they have, I think is a stain on the conscience of the Labour Party. I think we've got a responsibility to act now. Jeremy Corbyn, and this is a message that I'm afraid needs to be heard by some of his supporters on social media who continue to troll those of us who've spoken out against anti-Semitism. Jeremy Corbyn has now been very clear that there is a problem of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, and he is resolved to tackle it. That he will now be judged on his actions rather than his words. And I think the whole Labour Party needs to come together in that spirit of tackling this pernicious form of racism, which has infected too many parts of our party.
And what does he need to do, Wes? What practical steps does he need to take? Because he's repeatedly said, hasn't he, over the months as this has been discussed, I'm against anti-Semitism, I'm against all forms of racism. What does he need to do practically?
Well, we know that there are still a number of cases of anti-Semitism that have been reported to the Labour Party that haven't been dealt with. I think he needs to get those fast-tracked and make sure that when he says zero tolerance to anti-Semitism, that it's actually carried through in action. It was pretty depressing that there was a counter-protest organised yesterday in Jeremy Corbyn's name against the Board of Deputies of British Jews and the Jewish Leadership Council by those that are still saying that there isn't a problem and this is all being used to attack Jeremy Corbyn. I think Jeremy Corbyn needs to be very clear now that these people do not speak in his name. I am pretty fed up, as an understatement, I am pretty fed up that those of us who have spoken out repeatedly about this problem and asked for it to be taken seriously have been accused of weaponising anti-Semitism by Labour MPs like Chris Williamson, have been accused of creating mood music like by people like Len McCluskey, the General Secretary of Unite. And these people, though they do not use anti-Semitic language themselves, they have contributed to the culture that has allowed anti-Semitism to fester. And those people who've been silent in the face of this problem have also been, through their silence, complicit. So I think when the Jewish community is saying enough is enough, I think it's time for us to say we've got the message, enough is enough, and we're now going to take action. Because, Jeremy Corbyn put out, in fact, a number of statements in the last few days. I think he will find and is finding that statements accounting for very little, it's action that will speak louder than words. I actually think with Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, there's actually a massive opportunity because Jeremy Corbyn, unlike previous Labour leaders, has a hearing with sections of the left that have always had a problem with anti-Semitism. They do take him seriously and they admire him because of his wider political project and mission. And I think Jeremy Corbyn, more than any other Labour politician, has not just a responsibility, but actually a great opportunity to educate people about modern forms of anti-Semitism, how it manifests itself, what kind of language is and isn't appropriate. And if Jeremy Corbyn seizes this moment and this opportunity to show real leadership on the issue, I think not only will it help to alleviate concerns about the Labour Party, I think it could be a really game-changing moment in terms of tackling anti-Semitism on the left. And I've said this to Jeremy privately many times. I've met with Jeremy and with other Labour MPs and peers to talk through the problems. I know Jeremy's met previously with leading figures from the Jewish community. I don't think the message has gotten through. I hope it now has. I'm sorry that it's come to this where people are demonstrating outside Parliament. But I think, I know certainly the Shadow Cabinet met today and this issue dominated the discussion. And I think the majority of the Shadow Cabinet have got the message as well that enough is enough. So I hope that we will now see Jeremy Corbyn step forward. I will happily work with Jeremy Corbyn in any way I can to help him work through this issue. But we really do need to see the action now rather than fine words.
Wes Streeting, thanks very much. Hadley, you were also down in Parliament Square yesterday, weren't you? What was the mood like?
I was. It was very jolly. It was quite peaceful, despite so many people on Twitter that day telling me that Jews were hysterical and conniving to bring down Jeremy Corbyn. They all looked pretty pleasant and calm, to be honest. It was nice, actually. It was nice being in a group of people who weren't all telling me that I was wrong for finding this mural anti-Semitic and that I was wrong for being upset about Jeremy Corbyn having defended it. I hear a lot of people saying it's an allegation. He did defend the artist. And it was nice being with a group of people who weren't accusing me of weaponizing anti-Semitism to bring down Jeremy Corbyn. You know, I don't have strong feelings about Jeremy Corbyn. I'm not a member of any political party in this country. I never have been. I do have strong feelings about anti-Semitism. And I am personally, to be honest, I'm really personally devastated at the way I've seen Corbyn repeatedly either brush up against anti-Semites or endorse them and refuse to take responsibility for it. Until the public response forces him to. And the only reasons I can see for this, you know, whether it's him endorsing someone who promoted blood libel, endorsing Hamas, Hezbollah, belonging to Facebook groups that had anti-Semitic posts on them, and now writing a Facebook comment in support of a very blatantly anti-Semitic mural, either he doesn't really see anti-Semitism as a problem or he's stupid. And he clearly is not stupid, so I find this devastating as a Jewish person.
Owen?
Well, I mean, firstly, anti-Semitism is one of the greatest horrors of human history, whether it be the centuries of pogroms, of expulsions, of blood libel, culminating, of course, in the Shoah, the attempted extermination of an entire people by industrialised means, and then ever since, decades of continued anti-Semitism, which exists all over the world. And what people on the left have to accept is if, for example, somebody who is Muslim talks about Islamophobia, we don't then deflect and start talking about, what's going on in Saudi Arabia, for example, or in a state which happens to be majority Muslim, for example. We would take very seriously what they're saying. And that goes the same for people who are Jewish. And I know many people who are Jewish who do feel scared, anxious, and fearful. And that horrifies me beyond belief. You know, last year I spoke at the Jewish Labour Movement in memory of my best friend's father who died of cancer a few years ago. And what I spoke about there was about the need for people on the left to drive anti-Semitism without compromise from our ranks. And that's something I wholeheartedly believe. I do think, you know, that letter which the leadership presented yesterday to the Board of Deputies and elsewhere was an excellent letter which went into detail about the nature of anti-Semitism. It wasn't a letter of platitudes. It addressed the issue seriously. I do think, you know, Jeremy Corbyn has been a passionate supporter, of course, of the Palestinian cause, as well as the Kurdish cause, for that matter. And there are elements within the Palestinian cause who clearly exhibit anti-Semitic tendencies, who have to be ruthlessly driven out. And the danger otherwise is anyone in the Palestinian Liberation Cause, which I believe is, you know, a great cause for justice and freedom, will end up rubbing against people with heinous anti-Semitic views, and they have to be, without compromise, driven out. I do think, just finally, you know, Ria Wolfson's on the Labour NEC, and I think she's a superb Jewish socialist I've been very proud to support when she stood for the National Executive Committee. And she said, there is a problem of anti-Semitism on the left. There are people who have used this fact for political gains. These two facts exist simultaneously, and the latter should never undermine our fight against the former. And we've seen this with Israel, where just because there are those who have used anti-Semitism to shut down any criticism of Israel, the logical fallacy, which is a frightening logical fallacy, is therefore to say that any form of, any claim of anti-Semitism is a smear. It's not. Anti-Semitism exists. I've seen it. I've come across it myself. People talking about Jewish lobbies and all the rest. Various tropes, comparing, you know, the brutal occupation of the Palestinian people to the Nazi genocide. They're not the same thing. This occupation is an injustice in of itself. It's not an industrialized extermination. So I think it has to be taken seriously by people on the left. I do think the leadership is doing that. I do think the actions are there.
It took them a while, didn't it, to come up with that letter? You're right, it's very strongly worded, didn't it? And more detailed than anything we'd seen, but
It was, you know, over the weekend, I think, you know, they put that letter together. I would have preferred a letter which went into depth and detail than one that was rushed, to be honest with you, that actually engaged with the issue. I would say that a lot of the accusations that have come across involving Labour members predate 2015. I mean, there was one example of somebody who was suspended under Ed Miliband, then readmitted. That then was brought to public attention again and then connected to Jeremy Corbyn. I don't think that's fair. I mean, the difference between, you know, the previous leadership is that person was expelled under Jeremy Corbyn. It was the same with Naz Shah. I mean, you know, she was not somebody who supported Jeremy Corbyn. She supported Andy Burnham in any case. Those accusations are from 2014. So all I would say is these are clear cases, but I don't think it's fair to just, you know, there has been an attempt to, I think, put all these cases together to suggest that Jeremy Corbyn himself is anti-Semitic. And I just do not believe that for one second. But the leadership, I do think, is taking the right action. But the test is how people like Hadley feel, not how people like me feel. And that has to be, you know, the test going forward. And unless Jewish people who are progressive and in the Labour Party in particular feel happy about the Labour Party as a place which takes on anti-Semitism, because what is the left other than a crusade against bigotry, oppression and exploitation in all forms, then our work, we failed. I mean, you know, that's that really.
I don't care about these kind of other incidents among the Labour Party, you know, the Naz Shah stuff and all that. What I care about is the fact that Jeremy Corbyn himself has repeatedly associated or defended anti-Semites, whether it's Paul Eisen, whether it's Raed Salah, whether it's inviting Hamas Hezbollah to the Houses of Parliament but refusing to meet Netanyahu. I mean, I am no fan of Netanyahu, but that is a clear double standard. And to say that he, as he originally said, that he wrote underneath that mural, which has, like, I cannot believe when I saw that mural 3 years ago when it was in the Jewish Chronicle. Those Jewish stereotypes are something like from the 1930s. When he said that he was doing this for freedom of speech, I mean, but he only uses that argument in regards to these kind of issues, never against anything that's not to do with anti-Semitism. He marched against, you know, the cartoons of Muhammad. Why is a cartoon of Muhammad bad, but a mural showing a lot of hook-nosed men manipulating the world acceptable? I don't believe Jeremy Corbyn's anti-Semitic. I don't want to get into that argument. What I believe is that he did not take it seriously. He doesn't see it as an issue because Jews are seen as powerful and wealthy and therefore not an oppressed minority. And I don't know a single Jewish person right now who is not having this conversation that I'm having with myself, which is, who on earth do we vote for now?
What about that point, Owen, about a kind of blind spot, a kind of being a kind of fellow traveller with people who feel like this not kind of noticing.
And also just taking personal responsibility, not just talking about the Labour Party. It's personal responsibility.
On the issue of for example, of Palestine and Israel, I'm a gay man. And there are many elements, clearly, on the side of the Palestinian authorities, not least Hamas, who are not running around waving the rainbow flag. They have an extremely, you know, often very unsavoury, entrenched, homophobic views. Do I think, therefore, we shouldn't, you know, that there will be a lasting peace in the Middle East without involving Hamas and others in negotiations and discussions, even though many of those people wish people like me did not exist? I don't. And, you know, in the case of the Israeli government and Netanyahu, they are directly, they are supported by the West. They are armed by the West. Israel is a Western ally. The problem is there is a lack of dialogue and negotiations with the Palestinian side, who do obviously, include people who have, let's just say, very unsavory views. But there has to be a lasting peace. And I genuinely believe that is his motives. And I think... I worry about that slightly, just in terms of how that's been portrayed. What I am more worried about is the fact there are people on the Palestinian Liberation Movement side, a minority, but they still exist, who do use anti-Semitic tropes, and they have to be ruthlessly driven out the movement for Palestinian liberation and freedom. Because, you know, if this idea that, again, that any claim of anti-Semitism is an attempt to shut down criticism of Israel is just not true. And I think for me, that's, you know, people who like me, who believe that this is a brutal, immoral and illegal occupation, have to confront anyone who is anti-Semitic who stands against that. I don't believe for a second Jeremy Corbyn has any sympathies for that. That mural was obviously, it was removed because it had anti-Semitic imagery in it. I don't believe Jeremy Corbyn looked at that mural properly. But
then,
I mean, that's
why
where...
did he comment on it? I mean, it had nothing to do with Israel either. He's not very bright. Or he didn't see it as a problem.
I mean, I've rushed through things on Twitter and Facebook before, which I didn't understand, and left comments without thinking about it. I guess this one's impossible to resolve, in the sense that I just can't believe. I don't believe that John Landsman would have run Jeremy's leadership campaigns if he genuinely thought he had any anti-Semitic views. John Landsman is somebody who is obviously Jewish, but takes anti-Semitism extremely seriously and is attacked and demonised by these cranks constantly for doing so. And these people who constantly, people like Tony Greenstein, he was expelled from the Labour Party, including, by the way, in the dossier, because of the way he'd attacked me for speaking out against anti-Semitism. I just think anyone who thinks that because Jeremy Corbyn supports Palestinian liberation and is confusing that with any endorsement of their anti-Semitism needs to learn very quickly that they are going to be driven out of the left and the Labour Party. It will be a war against anti-Semitism, which will not end until every single anti-Semite is driven out of the progressive cause. And I believe that's what the leadership meant when they wrote that letter yesterday.
Randeep, our leader line this morning was critical, wasn't it? It was a sense that perhaps Jeremy Corbyn hasn't shown enough leadership on this issue. He could, for example, call out those people who are online telling Hadley that the only reason that she's worried about this is because she's anti-Jeremy Corbyn. There's quite a lot of that argument about, isn't there?
I think that, Jeremy Corbyn, because this mural had been raised before, so this mural sparked the protest, and as Hadley said, it been raised in 2015, and Jeremy Corbyn needed to have acted decisively. And the reason that he needed to act decisively is because when, one of his own MPs has to flee a room having been heckled by somebody on the basis that she was Jewish, that's when you start thinking you need to sort of deal with this problem. And I don't believe that Jeremy Corbyn is an anti-Semite. I really don't. I don't think the man is racist. I don't think he's, he's predisposed to any of these things. Being leader of the Labour Party was something that was thrust upon him, obviously. He sought it, but it slightly... probably came in a way that he didn't expect. But, being the leader of a large political party, one of the big parties in Europe, means you've got to face up to responsibilities of the task ahead. And one of those is implementing the Chakrabarty report, which still kind of lays on a shelf. One of which is protecting his own MPs from energized supporters, if one can call it that. And one of those things is to deal with things like the mural very decisively. Without those actions, they're not the actions of an unconventional politician. They're actions of a politician who shows his inexperience. And that for me is kind of where the problem lies for him. This is a constructive criticism that's being offered rather than a sort of personalised attack.
Do you think there's sometimes a tendency, Owen, with this issue, but also more broadly, to see criticism or to see issues like this as a kind of attack, or as a, to sort of retreat a little bit within the bunker and say, these are things the mainstream media's raising, or these are things that, it's, and perhaps not to confront them as quickly or as robustly as they should.
Well, I think certainly, well, that certainly shouldn't be the case. And if that is the case, it doesn't justify it. I mean, look, yes, obviously Jeremy Corbyn's leadership has faced overwhelming concerted demonisation by much of the press who have treated, you know, the opposition in a democracy as illegitimate. I mean, this is a country which, you know, crushed the saboteurs. Front page of the Sun on the day of the election was called was... you know, blue, what was it, blue murder, talking about killing off the Labour Party. The Labour Party portrayed as a bunch of terrorist sympathisers and allies and extremists. We're not, I think, the sort of rhetoric we've seen deployed against the opposition or any critics, you know, enemies of the people in this country is pretty extreme. And I think clearly, therefore, there's a sense of, look, you know, basically every day, as far as the leadership of the Labour Party is concerned, is get up and walk into a... into a, you know, constant firefight with an attack from all sides, including the fact that within the Parliamentary Labour Party, the clock has clearly been turned back before 10 p.m. on the 8th of June 2017. There's a very febrile atmosphere amongst certain elements of the Parliamentary Labour Party over not just this, over Brexit and other issues. But, you know, yes, there is that constant attack and sense of being under constant siege, and lots of supporters out there of the leadership feel we're constantly under attack and demonised, and we don't really have many friends with any platform to speak for us. Or
there's a danger then, isn't there, that that's used to sort of legitimise ignoring or suppressing some of these things.
Which is why it's so important, I think, that people who are on the left who are sympathetic, supportive of the leadership, there's not very many people with in terms of the mainstream media with a platform, do speak out and make clear that anti-Semitism exists on the left and it has to be ruthlessly taken out and confronted. And to say to people that when they start using tropes of, you know, anti-Semitic tropes, because there's this sense that, you know, basically these left, some think, unless you're a neo-Nazi, you can't be anti-Semitic, which is clearly not true, then you know, we have to show that leadership. And I think that means supporting the leadership when it takes actions like the letter, which was issued yesterday. The left has to unite behind confronting anti-Semitism remorselessly and without compromise. And to say, look, just because the mainstream media weaponise issues, which they do, of course they do. Of course, any critics within the Parliamentary Labour Party will use anything, including Brexit, all this, in order to undermine the leadership. But that doesn't mean there isn't an issue that has to be confronted. That's what Ria Wolfson's saying there. There is a problem of anti-Semitism on the left. There are people who have used this fact for political gains. These two facts exist simultaneously, and the latter should never undermine a fight against the former. Absolutely. So, you know, the way to deal with it is to take action against any forms of anti-Semitism to have moral leadership.
Hadley, what could Jeremy Corbyn do now to satisfy you and those other people out there? Or is there nothing he could do?
It's not like we're sitting around, you know, some kind of table of elders and have, you know, banished him into the desert. What he needs to do is take personal responsibility. I don't want to hear about pockets of anti-Semitism in the left. It's like, dude, you lived in them. You mixed with them. Stop talking about this amorphous left that's got like dry rot in it as though he's some sort of passive participant. He was part of those groups. You know, and Smee's what heckled, which Randeep was alluding to with the Chakrabarti report. What happened to that heckler? Jeremy Corbyn spoke to him afterwards and said, I'll give you a call. You know, Jews see that and sit and think, this is someone who doesn't take this problem seriously. You know, if Ruth Smith had been a black MP and had been racist, had been heckled in a racist manner, would Jeremy Corbyn have been like, I'll give you a call later to that guy? I don't believe so. You know, what we see is someone who doesn't take it seriously and someone who just kind of waves it away when he is caught brushing up against or actively endorsing anti-Semites, as happened, for example, with the Paul Eisen case or Raed Salah. You know, what we need is personal culpability, an admission of personal culpability. This is not just a problem of the left, although we can certainly talk about problem on the left with anti-Semitism. I think what Jews need to see is that Jeremy Corbyn takes personal responsibility and to explain those instances and not jazz hands them away.
I think that that's asking too much, really, Hadley. I mean, I think that one can, as the leader of the Labour Party, he has a sort of wider responsibility. I mean, as a sort of quirky backbench MP, there are all sorts of things that people can do. But assuming control of the leader's office, control of the NEC, controlling of Labour HQ, involves you with a series of decisions which go far wider beyond your own personal history. And that's, for me, where I think that's where we can hold him effectively to account for being the leader of a very large and a powerful political organisation. And I think you can one could sort of hold every politician up to far too great a degree of scrutiny for things which are no longer relevant to their current standing. And that's why I think it, when he was leader of the Labour Party and didn't do enough, I think that's fair to criticise him. Otherwise, we're sort of lost in a foreign policy debate, I think, which is some way in the past. I'm not saying he was right or wrong in those things. I just think to deal with him as the Labour leader is the right way. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I feel I can sense your pain in evincing these emotions. But I think that as the Labour leader, he needs to be examined rather than sort of slightly wayward and, you know, somebody who didn't really feature in the public consciousness very much.
I just feel that by taking personal responsibility, that is setting the example to, for example, the cranks who are attracted to him because they feel that he is tolerant to anti-Semites, or to people who conflate anti-Israel with anti-Semitism. And, you know, there is a kind of personality, I don't want to use the word cult, that sounds incredibly negative, but a personality attraction around Corbyn, and certainly his supporters see him as a different kind of politician, which is why I feel he needs to take personal responsibility. And we all know, all of us in this room know, that if Theresa May or Nigel Farage or any other politician not on the left had been caught, for want of a better verb there, doing these things that Corbyn had done, the same people who defend Jeremy Corbyn for doing them now would be all over them for doing that. It just feels like there's this jarring personal hypocrisy around Corbyn's actions, and I think that's what a lot of Jews see.
I think we could probably all discuss this for the rest of the day and possibly the rest of the week, but thank you all very much. That's all we've got time for. Thanks to Mandy Ramesh, Hadley Freeman and Maureen Jones. And with Parliament rising for Easter, we'll be taking our own Politics Weekly recess, so we'll be back in 3 weeks' time. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Heather Stewart. Thanks for listening.